reconvene the conference committee on Senate File 550. I think we have found consensus on a number of items, and what I would propose to do is kind of go back through the side-by-side, front-to-back, and pick up the items that we have agreed to or that we have an amendments for that hopefully lead to consensus. And the first among those would be on page R3. Discussion with Senator Anderson, who is responsible for the RDF accounts in the Senate. We adopted the language in Section 2 of the bill. That was a pending discussion with Senator Anderson. She felt uncomfortable about having the appropriation extended indefinitely, which is what Section 2 does for the Institute, the Initiative for Renewable Energy and Environment. And so we agreed on a four-year sunset on that, at which time it can be revisited. I believe, Mr. Iloff, we have language that would accomplish that.
Yes, Mr. Chair. On line 2.24, delete the word thereafter and insert through 2012. And you'll recall that we changed earlier in an amendment on that line. 2011 was changed to 2009.
Correct. Necessary to delete thereafter if we put through 2012 after that.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Senator Prendersola.
I would move that on line 224 we delete the word thereafter and insert through 2012. Pardon? What?
I think staff agrees that this is.
What did you say? Something
solution
different?
To the.
I wouldn't argue with you on that.
Oh. my Senate counsel is arguing with me on it.
Oh, well, I can't
any
stop that.
Discussion to the motion.
Well, I'm sorry. He's saying that it doesn't work, so maybe we should ask Mr. Fuller to address
which
it.
Which motion are we about to vote on? Mr. Chair.
Mr. Fuller.
On 2.24, is the proposal to say July 1, 2009, and each July 1, 2012?
Through
July 1, 2012.
July 1 through 2012.
Would you repeat it again, please, Bob?
Yeah. Each July 1st through 2012.
Chair,
Representative Beard,
read a little more smoothly, just to say beginning July 1st, 2009,
and ending
running through July 1st, 2012, comma. But that would give us the 4-year beginning and end date.
No,
wouldn't it?
My suggestion would be to adopt the motion that's before us with the instruction that fiscal staff make any corrections that they deem necessary to clarify the intent.
Okay.
The
Senator Prentice-Olin incorporates that in her motion.
Too many conferences.
Any discussion to the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. I think next, then, members, would be the on page R3, section 3 of the bill. That was Representative Bly's amendment. I think we had general agreement that we would support the language in section 3, but we were not sure the intent on section 3. We were not sure that the language accomplished exactly what was intended. And so I asked Representative Bly to redraft language there to make that clear. Representative Bly, if you would like to explain the amendment that we have before us.
I also have a sheet going around that explains the provision on attorney's fees that this amendment addresses. And let's see, initially you had asked me about the language that began on 3.27, is that correct? Earlier today. Just to comment on that, and I don't know whether or not it's absolutely necessary, but it is a point. Essentially, what that does, that language does, is to say if someone were to condemn a person's land and they did not use it for the purpose that they said they were going to use it for, that then the property owner could take them to have some recourse to take them. Action to have them release that condemnation. That's not as necessary to what I wanted to accomplish, but it was something that the researcher, when she looked through the language, included. But to the other part of this, I think there was some concern that the original language in 3.23 and 3.24 starting with 3.19 and going down to 3.24, was too broad or had so many things that it became difficult to really keep track of it. So what I've done in this amendment is to say that what we're concerned about is sections 117.31, which is the attorney's fees, so that the utility putting up a high-voltage transmission line would be subject to that portion of the eminent domain law, and that the amendment asks that the cap on appraisals be removed. I understand in talking with the Senator Solon that she prefers to look at other language addressing that, and I am not really opposed to that. We could certainly consider that. Does that Does that answer your question about what we're looking at?
So,
well, perhaps, but Senator Prentice-Olin.
So, Representative Bly, is this then there would be no cap at all on the award?
That's for the appraisal. That's what that language says. Yes, and that way. In essence, then I was concerned about how complicated the appraisal language was, and I thought maybe we can avoid dealing with that by just saying that there wouldn't be a cap.
So this could, Mr. Chair,
Senator Prentice,
Representative Bly, this could rise to $10,000, $20,000 or greater if there. That no cap at all.
Well, and I understand your concern about that, and I guess I would accept. You talked about $3,000 or something like that would be a cap. Is that what you were?
Representative Bly, we had agreed to the language that the department had brought.
Yes, right.
And which is really six times what the current.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I'm saying that I would accept that.
And as I said, there may be merit to this whole language. It's just that the Senate has not had a chance
I understand.
To review it or have a hearing or really understand all the intricacies of it.
Yes, I understand that.
And so we thought, well, at least we could perhaps go along with Section A. And there wasn't even consensus on that. And accept the language that the department was recommending because we felt they probably understand this and are making a reasonable recommendation. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if any Senate members wish to comment any further or differently on this, but it would be my preference to adopt the language recommended by the department.
And does their language include some of the other provisions here? I'm not sure that I've really had a chance to look at that carefully, other than the amount.
Representative Bly, that's all the language we have from the department, is what I gave you earlier.
Okay. And it really only addresses that one issue.
Representative Bly, I do not understand how the question of attorney's fees was addressed in the original language.
In the original language, in 3.19A, sections 117031, that's the provision that addresses attorney's fees. And so it was saying that all of these sections, the high-voltage transmission line, would not be able to be exempt from these rules. And what I'm saying is that I'll give up on the others and ask just for the attorney's fees, that they not be exempt from that rule. So that there isn't other language that's confusing or broader than people are willing to consider. So.
Yes, and Mr. Chair?
Senator Prettner-Solon.
Mr. Chair and Representative Bly, I will... we will have a hearing on this the next session. So
yeah, and I'm very pleased with that.
Okay. So, Senator, did you have language that you felt we would be able to act upon at this time, or how would you like to proceed?
Chair, I would move Section A. No, actually, I would move this amendment first on line 3.22. Delete the existing language and replace it with. And did everybody get a copy of this? But on line 3.22, it says awarded, and this continuation of the fees. The fees awarded may not exceed $1,500 for all types of property, except for a public service corporation's use of eminent domain for a high voltage transmission line, where the award may not exceed $3,000.
Yeah, Representative Bly, I believe you just indicated your willingness to accept that. So the motion then would be to adopt the language on lines 3.17 through 3.21.
That's correct.
I think that falls within the purview of staff's technical corrections. So, Senator, would you please repeat the
amendment? Mr. Chair, maybe we should take it in two steps. First would be to amend the language on 3.22 by deleting the language that is currently there and replacing it with awarded may not exceed $1,500 for all types of property except for a public service corporation's use of eminent domain for a high voltage transmission line where the award may not exceed $3,000.
Members understand the amendment. Any discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed?
And then, Mr.
The amendment is adopted. Senator Solon.
And then, Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt Section 3, lines 317 through 322, as amended, also eliminating the parentheses, A parentheses, on line 3.19.
That motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. That amendment is adopted. Representative Bly, I think that's as far as we're going to be able to go this evening. And as you know, we have commitments in both the House and the Senate to take up this issue and have hearings, presumably. I know in the House we've agreed to do that in the interim.
Mm-hmm. So just for my clarification then, the only thing that you're doing is increasing the award from 1,500 to 3,000. That would be capped at 3,000.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Prettner-Solon.
Actually, we're increasing it from $500.
Yeah, I understand.
To 3,000,
Yeah. And the attorney's fees is not being considered.
Chair members, that brings us to page R5. Language is identical except for the additional paragraph B on the House side.
Yeah.
We're working off of House language. For a couple of amendments prepared, I believe.
Somebody want to tell me which one we're working off of? I believe
that would be the A11 amendment. I have to step in for a minute. Mr. Chair, I'd offer the A11 amendment.
Amendment is before us. I think we have had that discussion before. And this, I believe, represents an agreed upon solution to the language in this section. Is there any discussion to the amendment?
This will mean anything.
Thank you. Yes, I know we've worked long and hard on getting the profitable word out of here, and I think this amendment heads in that direction, but I'd be interested in hearing what final comments Director Glahn might have, to, if I may.
Certainly. Right. Director Glahn, would you care to share your thoughts?
Thank you, Chairman Hilty, Representative Beard. I did have a
I don't know if it's proper for a witness to ask a question, but perhaps in my,
right ahead.
In my comments to Representative Beard, I could pose a question to him. My concern, our legion, but I'm particularly concerned in this the way the amendment is structured in only addressing the language on line 26, page 4, that there's been no change to either lines 4.24 or 4.25 of the House language. And my concern there is the last word on line 4.24 is shall, and the first word on line 4.25 is provide. So I would read the full text of the amendment and the House language as not providing the Public Utilities Commission any discretion as to whether or not they would put in place a financial incentive that would create a preferred resource choice for the public utility and do the other stuff in there. So as you recall, the amendment that was discussed this morning did not include those words shall provide. But this amendment appears that it would preserve 4.24 and 4.25, which contains those words.
Representative Taylor?
Go ahead.
Well, Mr. Chair, I appreciate Director Glahn's concern, and I believe that what I think I would like to see happen in the language that we had originally talked about would be to leave line 4.23 as is, delete the period, and insert the term such that, and delete all of line 4.24, line 4.25, everything before the word implementation. So at the end of line 4.25, add the word is, and delete line 4.26, so it would read, starting with line 4.23, adopt any mechanism that satisfies the criteria of the this subdivision such that implementation of cost-effective conservation is a preferred resource choice for the public utility considering the impact of conservation on earnings of the public utility. And I think that I appreciate Director Glahn catching that because we should have incorporated that into the amendment.
I think part of the confusion there is that in the discussion previously we had crossed off those words, but I don't believe we ever did actually act on that deletion.
Mr. Chair, Glahn, that was my recollection, that an amendment was discussed, but a motion was never made, nor was a vote ever taken.
And as you were approaching, we were mulling over how this actually fit, but this solution that Representative Kalin just suggested satisfy your concerns.
Mr. Chair, assuming I understood him correctly, it would.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have no further questions from Mr. Paul. So, can we repeat that whole sentence again, Mr. Chair?
Would you like me to do that, Mr. Chair?
Let's have Mr. Eloff do that just so we're sure that staff has it correct.
The keys off the line.
Starting on 4.23, adopt any mechanism that satisfies the criteria of this subdivision such that implementation of cost-effective conservation is a preferred resource choice for the public utility considering the impact of conservation on earnings of the public utility.
Members all understand the proposed amendment. Representative Kalin, Senator Pretner Solon, before she stepped out, had moved the A11 amendment. So I think what we would have to do is have you move the language you just heard as an amendment to the amendment?
I so move, Mr. Chair.
Everyone understand the motion to amend the A11 amendment with the language that we have just heard before us? Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment to the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The amendment to the amendment is adopted. To the amendment as amended. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of its adoption, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The amendment is adopted as amended. Adopted. And Senator
Good work.
Dibble, we would need to move then.
Mr. Chair, I'll move
adoption of the
House language section 5
as amended.
As amended.
Any discussion? That is section 5 on page R5 in the House language as amended. Any discussion to that amendment or that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Section as amended is adopted. Mr. Pomeroy.
Mr. Chair, the next section that has not yet been acted upon is on R7, section 6 on both sides. This is the central corridor section. I believe the agreed upon language is to take all of the Senate section 6, lines 5.12 to 6.15. And then also include from the House side 5.22 to 5.36.
6.15.
Chair, I'll move. Mr. Chair, I'll move Senate language, section 6, 5.12,
6.15, and House language.
5.22.
5.22 to 5.36.
That motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails. The language is adopted. Members, I believe that that brings us to the CBED language on section 9.
Section 7?
Right. Actually, language starts on section 7. Substantive part of that being section 9, dealing with the standard contract language. Representative Falk, I believe, have proposed an amendment, the A52 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A52 amendment.
It was distributed this afternoon.
Papers we have here.
I have lost.
Right in here. Apparently, every member does not have a copy. Perhaps we should move on to the next item and come back to this when we have additional copies.
I'd move to withdraw the amendment to
with the intention to come back and readdress it.
Thank you, Representative Falk. Representative Falk temporarily withdraws the amendment. Mr. Conway, where are we next?
Mr. Chair, on page R11, the Senate language, section 8, and there's the A53 amendment.
I believe actually that with respect to this language, we had agreed to part of the Senate language and part of the House language. Mr. Pomeroy, do you want to clarify that for us?
Mr. Chair, I believe actually what we're looking at is section 12 on the House, 8.24 to 9.5, and then moving over to the Senate language on page R12 through the end of that section on 8.14. And the A53 amendment would amend on the Senate side on page R12.
Representative Beard.
The notes from earlier today, I've got section 12, 8.24, actually through line 9.7.
They're identical.
Representative Beard.
Yeah, I warned you when it gets close to 10 o'clock. Right? Okay, so what was the motion again that Mr. Palmer was at?
There isn't one yet.
Oh, there isn't.
I don't get to make motions.
So you need to suggest them.
Representative Beard, what Mr. Pomeroy was describing is that we believe that we had earlier agreed on the House language on page R11, 8.24 through 9.5, and does that go through 9.7, I believe?
9.7.
Through 9.7 on page R12, and then the Senate language, 8.6 through 8.14, with the amendment being to the Senate language and that we just mentioned.
So shall I offer this amendment?
Senator Solon.
Mr. Chair, I move the A53 amendment.
That motion is before us, amending the Senate language on page R12. Any discussion to the motion? Senator Sanger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess I'm trying to understand this a little bit, but I have this immediate cause for concern, and I hope that someone can allay that. We have an Olmsted County Waste and Energy incinerator in Rochester that's a wonderful thing. Now, how might that be affected in either a positive or negative way with this amendment? Or would it?
Senator Sundrum, I believe that this section refers only to green pricing. It does not apply to the renewable energy standard.
Okay. Mr. Chair, so no negative impact, right? Okay, thank you.
Green, Staff can confirm that, but it's correct.
Well, they can't be part of the pricing program.
So they can't pay higher for the energy.
Any further discussion to the amendment? We'll wait for Senator Sanjo. Put it another way, members, I believe the intent of the amendment is to say that utilities can't do green pricing on burning garbage.
Oh, when you put it that way. Even sparks can't be for that.
I don't know. He's looking kind of... We were, Senator. So we do have the motion before us to adopt the A53 amendment. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Sorry, got a little ahead of myself. All those
I felt like we were in Representative Constantine.
It is getting late, Representative.
We may have to go together here.
All those opposed? Seeing none. The amendment is adopted. Senator Pretner-Soley.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Section 12, lines 8.24 through 9.7, and Senate Section 8, lines 8.6 through 8.14 as amended.
That motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment, the language is adopted. Mr. Pomeroy.
Mr. Chair, members, I believe the the A52 amendment has gone around, so we can go back to page R9.
Representative Falk, would you like to?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A52 amendment.
And Representative Falk, would you care to address the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A52 amendment just clarifies some language with respect to the standardized contract for projects of 5 megawatts or less. This is for seabed projects. The section or paragraph B states that for projects larger than 5 megawatts, we're going to start a proceeding within the commission with a group of seabed advocates, including developers and utilities, and to submit a report with recommendations on standardized contract provisions to the House and Senate committees with primary jurisdiction over energy policy by January 31st, 2010. So we're just trying to get people together with the that's basically what we're adding in this amendment is the to bring together a stakeholder group to look at ways to standardize the contracts for projects that are greater than 5 megawatts. And the there's just a couple technical changes in paragraph A about the standardized contracts and how it relates to the DG contract, which is currently already on file.
Representative Falk, we were familiar with the language that we have in the side-by-side. Could you describe how the amendment differs from that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The, I guess, in the side-by-side, that's broken out into projects of categories of 5 megawatts or less and greater than 5 megawatts, and it tries to in lines 6.24 in the side-by-side, the standardized contract form must be similar in all material respects to the standard contract form previously filed with the commission under 216B.2423, which is the DG contract, which is a 2 megawatt or less contract. It was brought to my attention that that might be problematic for some of the contracts which are greater than 5 megawatts, and so we're just trying to materially structure the 5-megawatt or less standardized contract to that DG contract, then initiating a proceeding to study ways to standardize the provisions for seabed projects in their contracts which are greater than 5 megawatts, and to offer that report back to the committees. If people have any further questions, I'd be happy to take them.
Are there questions for Representative Falk? Any representative from utilities care to comment on the amendment?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Beard.
I'm trying to think quickly at this hour. I'm trying to do the side-by-side of the amendment and what we had put to committee. Remember, we had quite a lengthy discussion on what was a more substantial bill than this, and we distilled it down, if I'm recalling correctly, we distilled it down to the essence that we all kind of had peace and value on, which is the piece we see here on page R9. I'm wanting some time to digest this 52 or for some assurance that it does not materially differ from what we have here, and I'm still trying to grasp the comments that Representative Falk made about why we felt the A52 amendment was necessary. And having said that, I'd just like to put Director Glahn on notice that I just wonder if he's read this. And does Director Glahn deal with seabeds, or is this
sorry about that. So anyhow, I hope a microphone picked that up somewhere. Thank you, John. But those are my concerns.
As far as I'm aware, that this is a negotiation between the utilities and the project proposers. I don't think that the department is involved in that.
Maybe, Mr. Chair, who we need to hear from then, the people that actually have to live with these contracts, actually have to sign them and live with them. Maybe that's our concern.
I did ask if a representative from any utility wished to comment. Mr. Sullivan?
Sure. Whichever. Step right up to the phone.
Well, my name is Joe Sullivan. I'm here. I'm representing Missouri River Energy Services. We have there's a couple concerns. The first is that I don't think it's necessary, as far as a standard contract, to drive everything through the Excel DG contract. Missouri River, we have contracts that we've been using that we would be happy to file with as our standard contract. I think that would work for the co-ops and the IOUs can do their own individual standard contracts. So I don't think it's necessary to drive everything through that that particular contract, firstly. The second issue that we have with the amendment is I'm a little concerned that there's not an opt-out clause. So if the parties agreed that, mutually agreed that, there was something that needed to be added to the contract. The current language does not allow for that. So we're concerned that there isn't just a general opt-out clause. And finally, as far as I hate to be in a position of arguing against the study, but I guess as far as seabed projects that are 5 megawatts or larger, I think that those tend to be very sophisticated actors on both sides of the equation, and I don't think it's necessary. But again, I hate to be in the position of arguing against a study. So, but I just don't know if that would be necessary. So with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions or bow out.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Sullivan.
Representative Beard.
Thank you. Would you remind me what DG means? It's a question I know it's on everybody's lips, so I'll ask it.
I'm not afraid to ask it.
Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, DG just stands for distributed generation.
That's what I thought, yeah.
Senator Prettner-Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, I have a couple of questions. First, I'm assuming, although it isn't specified, the commission refers to the Public Utilities Commission.
Representative Falk?
I apologize, I was speaking with Mr. Ely. Could you please request
Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Falk, what you referenced commission several times, is that the Public Utilities Commission?
That would be correct.
Okay, I'm not sure whether we need to define that in this section or if that's defined somewhere else fairly close. But I do have another question about lines 1.14 through 1.16 that says that after the date that the commissioner has signed this, there are other contracts on file are invalid. And I'm just wondering, and I guess maybe that's what Mr. Sullivan was suggesting too, that there isn't an option if they both decide something else would work better for them.
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, Senator Sullivan, Senator Sullivan, this deals with the contracts we're trying to bring forward and to facilitate and standardize these. And there is some language here in lines 1.10 that reads, after consultation with wind developers and producers, a utility governed by this section may modify the standardized contract currently on file under section 216B.2423 prior to submitting a standard contract form under this section if the modifications are reasonably necessary to account for circumstances that are unique to that particular utility. So we have tried to give the flexibility there required.
Mr. Sullivan, I'm curious to address one of your concerns.
Well, I too had a question about that language. And we generally consult with wind developers and producers when we have a project. And we wouldn't generally discuss with them, beforehand what the contract with them would look like. I mean, it comes up organically within the discussions and the negotiation. So I understand what you're trying to do there. You're trying to create some flexibility amongst the different utilities. And in general, I think that's a good thing. But I think that after the fact, when the two parties are actually negotiating about the project, there should be some clause at that point in time that allows for the utilities and the developer. In fact, I think that this is probably a provision that would be used by the developers more than the utilities, because we're going to have our contract on file. These are provisions that substantially we like. So I think that having an opt-out is probably better for the wind developer. It's a provision that would be better for them.
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess this, if my memory serves me correctly, with one of the recommendations that came out of the CBID Advisory Task Force, was the need to create a standardized contract. And really with this, the DG contract is about 6 pages long, if my memory serves me correctly, and you negotiate the provisions like the price.
But so many of these things could be standardized, whether it's the security provisions, and it's a way to facilitate and speed up these processes. And we know that the DG contract works. We're just scaling it up slightly to projects of up to 5 megawatts. And so I do think this is something that we've had a thorough discussion about, and I think it'll work.
Senator Prentner-Sloan.
Mr. Chair, I still have questions about that last sentence in the first paragraph, because, first of all, it seems to conflict with the sentence before it. But secondly, I'm concerned that it might harm some small developers, particularly if they're not working with Xcel, but some other company, and maybe the utility uses the wrong form, and the small developer is working in good conscience, believing that he's developing a contract, and then we decide that it's invalid, and we can't allow the project to go forward because it's not on the right form. I think it's problematic.
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Brenner-Sullen, the
the intent is to get towards a standardized form, and if we continue to have multiple forms, it makes it problematic to move towards standardizing. If we have anybody from the audience here on behalf of seabed developers who would like to offer their comments, I would welcome them.
Mr. Vaughn, did you wish to share some thoughts on this? Certainly.
I felt a question coming on from the committee members. To this point, Mr. Chair, and to the point that Senator Prittner Solon has brought up, I flag that sentence in here for two reasons. One, it references in line 1.15 commissioner, and I confirmed with Dr. Haar that in the point of in the way we construct statutes in this arena, the commission refers to the Public Utilities Commission. The commissioner refers to my boss, the Commissioner of Commerce. So I creates a little confusion for me just because of the terms of art that we use. In
I think it's a typo.
It may well be a typo rather than an error just in typing this rather than than the intent to drag in the Department of Commerce into this. I think highly unlikely that was the intent of the author.
I would incorporate I would incorporate the deletion of the ER to make it commission's order to clarify that was the intent.
Thank you,
Representative Falk.
And then to the substantive point, I would hope committee members would appreciate this as a triumph of the brand, that you recall my testimony earlier in the year about the projects that had been done under the umbrella of Seabed. There were some projects done by a couple of co-ops that had in the MRET system, the Midwest Renewable Energy Tracking System, styled themselves as Seabed projects. And I don't think they were necessarily even executed by utilities subject to 216B1691. So I would be concerned about this sort of language because we have still not done the difficult work of nailing down exactly what is a seabed project and what isn't a seabed project. That there was some party to one of these contracts would come along later on, discover this statute, and then go make some mischief that it was nonconforming when it wasn't intended to even apply to the parties who entered that particular agreement. So I understood the intent of the author was to apply to projects entered into by utilities subject to the renewable energy standard for these small projects and not to anything that under the umbrella of seabed. So perhaps some language about any applicable contract involving the utility above or something like that would address that issue. But I think there are larger issues with the idea that parties enter into contracts on a voluntary basis and then, if there's some error as to form that it generally is not invalidated. I don't know, perhaps Mr. Fuller could speak to this. You have the severability clauses and all that. So just a concern that I noticed sitting in the back row, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Glenn.
In consultation with Mr. Eliff, he has a suggestion which I think will alleviate people's concerns.
Mr. Eliff?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this addresses some of the concerns that Mr. Sullivan raised.
And what this amendment would do is on line 116, before the period, insert comma, unless the parties have mutually agreed to provisions that are not part of the standardized contract filed with the commission. So that whole sentence would read, any applicable seabed contract signed after the date of the commission's order whose provisions are not materially similar to the standardized contract on file is invalid unless the parties have mutually agreed to provisions that are not part of the standardized contract filed with the commission.
Senator Prentner Solon.
Could we not just omit that last sentence? I'm not sure that it adds anything to the paragraph.
Representative Falk?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Prettner-Solon, I guess in looking through this, if it would give the committee... That really is kind of the essence. It drives the fact that we have to get to a standardized contract, and if we move away from that, it kind of defeats the purpose. I think that Mr. Eloff articulated quite well that we have opened up the language that if parties mutually agree, they can alter and they can go away from that, but we are trying to facilitate these projects. In the negotiations, contracts have often took, I think, far too long to be signed and have the terms agreed upon. We're trying to make that process move quicker, and this is really one of the points that makes that happen.
Senator Prettner-Solon.
Well, I'm also wondering who's going to create the standardized contract. It doesn't specify that.
Yes, it does.
Senator Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Prettner-Solon, the utilities, each utility is defined in 16B, 1691, shall file with the commission a standardized contract. And so the utility is going to bring forward that contract, and it's going to be materially similar in aspects to the DG contract, which you currently have. And so each utility will bring that forward and create that to be materially similar to a contract that currently exists.
Mr. Logtag, did you want to...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Lauren Lotek from Otter Tail Power, and I'm here tonight, as others, without the benefit of my CBEC contract experts, but I will do my best. First, I just want to compliment Representative Falk for his flexibility in lines 1.4 through 1.16 to allow each utility to customize its contracts to meet the needs of its contractual relationships with its CBED customers. And I think that's an excellent move on his part. In lines 1.10 to 1.11, the phrase, after consultation with wind developers and producers, I'm not sure if this is meant to provide due process to developers. And if that's what's intended, is that adequate to provide that due process that normally would be provided in a commission kind of setting? And the words may modify in 1.11 would appear to suggest that there's a may not modify if consultation isn't adequate at the beginning of that sentence. So that's a little bit hazy to me. And then with reference to the last section, 1.17 through 1.23, for projects greater than 5 megawatts, we go back to sort of the one-size-fits-all contract for all utilities, and I think that's obviously clearly different than what Representative Falk contends with contracts smaller than 5 megawatts, and we would prefer that we would also be able to design contracts so that it would fit our utility situation, so that each utility could submit a its own contract form. And then finally, in 1.17 to 1.23, we've got the PUC A, initiating a proceeding, and B, submitting a report. And just on behalf of the PUC and all that's on their plate these days, that's just one more thing that they need to do. And we've got an awful lot of stuff over at their place today that they're working on. So I'm just concerned about their time and resources. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Logtug. Are there any questions for Mr. Logtug?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess to address the, I think that information is good. It's all right to go and ask people to come together, and specifically paragraph B, and to take some public input and to just put together a list of recommendations to be reported to these committees. We're not creating policy here. We're looking for some recommendations, for some common ground, something that people can agree on, and we can make a better decision based on that information. I think that information is a good thing. And once again, this really, if I could once again ask Mr. Eloff, paragraph A is not materially dissimilar from what we had before, and I think that was fairly agreed upon. There were some small changes to provide additional flexibility, but I was in the feel that we have come to consensus. Once again, it was a recommendation that we do create a standardized contract. This is a standardized contract for small projects, typically going to be one or two wind turbines if they are wind turbine projects. And these the differences should not be that great. We should be able to standardize these, facilitate them, get them done in an orderly manner, because there is a need and ability with some of the production incentives put forward in the stimulus, the federal stimulus law, and in the farm bill. And I think this will help facilitate getting projects done. If Mr. Eliff has any comments about differences, I would entertain those as well.
Mr. Gar.
It's basically the same.
Mr. Chair. Welcome back.
Thank you. For the record, Burl Hart, Executive Secretary for the Public Utilities Commission. I guess I'm just seeking some clarification to make sure I understand sort of what we're doing here. Section is, I guess it starts, the language starts in 114, having to do with the filing by the utilities and the standard is filing of the standardized contracts, and then it says any applicable seabed contract signed after the date of the, I guess that's supposed to be commission's order, whose provisions are not material, very similar to the standardized contract on file, is invalid. I presume the intent is that the commission is to individually approve each of these standardized contracts that are filed by the utility and issue an order in each instance. Is that right?
That would be correct.
Okay. On paragraph B, I'm wondering about the proceeding. I appreciate the empathy from my Mr. Lawtog, and he's right, but I just want to make sure I understand the proceeding that you're envisioning here. It says a proceeding shall provide for participation by the public in a balanced group of seabed advocates, including developers and utilities. Our proceedings are open, of course. We can't really restrict it to anybody that is interested and able is going to be able to participate. I just want to make sure that was clear.
Yep.
And that's consistent with the intent here. Is that correct?
That's correct. We have participation by the public. Yeah.
Right. Okay. That's all I need. Thank you, sir.
Are there any questions for Mr. Carr? Seeing none, thank you. Well, members, we have the amendment before us, and I believe Representative Falk has incorporated both the striking of the ER and commissioners on line 1.15 and also the language that Mr. Eliff read to us, amending line 1.16. Is there further discussion to the amendment? Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Falk, my understanding of the standardized contract is that it was to make it simplify the process for the small wind developers. So I'm not sure I understand what we're trying to do with Section B here, because it seems to me that when we get into the larger projects, you know, they are going to be a lot more unique. They're going to be bringing in a lot more dollars. They're going to want some of that flexibility to maybe drop their own contracts. Do we really need to have Section B of this amendment?
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dahl. This is driven in two aspects. The original language had a bifurcation for lower than 5 and greater than 5. And really this has been driven by some of the larger seabed projects having trouble getting contracts signed, in essence going on through negotiations in excess of 2 years. And the problem would stem with, you'd work on a price, work on security provisions, price of turbines would escalate, time would elapse, you'd have to come back and renegotiate. And really, some of the provisions you thought you had negotiated were no longer valid, or you had to come back, or things had changed in going through different attorneys and people offering different opinions. This really is not a very complex transaction. The producer develops six, or delivers 60 cycle power and is paid X cents per kilowatt for it. And so, to the extent that we can standardize things like insurance provisions, about how much security is required, about those things which often can be sticking points, I think it's a good thing. In paragraph B, we're just simply collecting information to figure out where and what particular areas of contracts we look or we can find that there can be agreement on to standardize. And we're not forcing them to accept or adopt any particular provisions in paragraph B. We're just asking for information to be reported to the committees. And hopefully, we can help drive some policy which will facilitate those larger projects in ways that it doesn't take 2 years to negotiate a contract. You can get it done in 60 days or 90 days, or I would say a more reasonable period of time.
Senator Dahl.
Sure. So Representative Polk, the problems that have been arising that are prompting this have been happening to projects that are greater than 5 megawatts, and if so, why are we focusing in on Section A, which is, you know, for to have smaller than 5 megawatts? I guess I'm not following some of the logic.
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dahl. There's two parts of it. Part of this is with the intent that the second part of the language that I had brought forward, which this amendment doesn't deal with, but was the requirement to buy 200 megawatts of small projects. And the intention there was that there is the ITC, the Investor Tax Credit, which is part of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, which allows for up to 30% of a project, a qualifying project, to be paid for by the federal government. Now, that those projects have to be built and constructed and in operation by December 31st, 2010. And in the part of the Next Generation Energy Act of 2007, we did what was called a sweet spot study, where we went and looked at all the nodes, the substations across the state, figure out how much energy could be placed onto those substations and really not affect the transmission system. So we've done a lot of the work to identify where we can strategically enhance the system, where we can strategically put power on. That's one part. The second part was the requirement to buy 200 megawatts of small projects, which are well suited to being hooked into those distribution systems, thereby avoiding MISO, which is oftentimes one of the stumbling blocks where you can have studies ranging for greater than a year. The third part is the standardized contract for these small projects would drive that development. Those projects are identified. We know where we can put power onto the grid. We bring forward a contract to standardize. People negotiate the price because there is no tariff mechanism. There is no standardized price. Utilities negotiate the price in these smaller projects. The contract is there. They're signed. And we can move quickly to build and develop these projects to capture those federal stimulus dollars, which allow for, I think, one of the greatest tools to finance projects where 30% of the project can be paid for by the federal government. But that has to be done in a timely fashion. And so these are all parts of an ultimate goal. And so they all play an integral part of it. And hopefully we can accomplish this.
Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair, so I'm representing folks so I can recap. The Section A is done so that you can take advantage of possible federal funding to jumpstart some of these projects. But we'd like to have Section B to look at the larger picture of an overall standardized contract. Is that well founded?
Representative Fall.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dahl, I think you've really captured the essence of it there. So,
thank you.
Further discussion to the amendment? Senator Brenner-Solin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Falk, I know that you've worked really hard on this, and I know that your intentions are good. Unfortunately, we're starting with a statute that's flawed in the first place and has never worked for seabed. And we continue to add on it when we're creating basically unworkable situations. And we've talked before about this statute having to be completely overhauled so that it can be useful. And I had really intended to vote for a standard contract, but I do have lots of problems with your amendment. No, actually, I I had problems with the original language, too. I think the idea of a standard contract for small projects is good.
House members, work a call. As soon as possible.
Okay. I can finish later.
Okay. Maybe you can.
What I'd like to do is to say this. In case you may not approve a contract that is not in accordance with this section, I'd like to do that.
Get a lasso.
Get out of this one.